It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The National Employment Report comes out at the beginning of each month. Viewed as an indication of how the economy is doing, people pay a little more attention to it in a presidential election year. Therefore, we've asked Robert Morris University Professor of Economics Brian O'Rourke to join us for a look at the economy. Brian O'Rourke, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thanks a lot, Paul.
Let's separate the fact from the fallacy. How is the economy doing?
Well, that's a great question. If you look just strictly at the data, it looks like the economy is really doing pretty well. You look at unemployment rates, they're down from their peaks. They're down almost by half. The GDP numbers are still good. We're growing. We're seeing expansion in the economy in terms of output. Productivity is pretty good. Even wages are up just a slight tick. Last month, they were up not, 3 cents an hour, but they're still on the way up rather than on the way down. So if you look just strictly at the numbers, there's a lot to be excited about. There's a but there.
Yeah, I was going to say, this has to be tempered with something.
Right. And what that's tempered with is just how all those numbers are counted. I'll just take the unemployment number, for example. Unemployment is calculated as looking at the number of people who do not have jobs but want jobs and dividing that by something we call the labor force. To be in the labor force, you have to either be employed with a job or unemployed. And that sounds like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. But the way the number is counted, the way that unemployment number is counted, it can be very misleading because you can be an individual who is working part-time but would rather work full-time, and you're counted as full-time. You can be someone who is working at a job that's not utilizing their skills completely, and you're considered employed.
Or you could be somebody who stopped looking for a job.
Well, if you stop looking, then you're not in the labor force, and you're not counted as unemployed anymore. So that number gets a lot of criticism by a lot of people. Fortunately, we do have another number that the Bureau of Labor Statistics publishes. It's another version of the unemployment number that tries to incorporate those oddities, those people that we don't think should be counted as employed, or those people who are out of the labor force and we think should be counted as unemployed, who simply aren't. And that number tells a much different story. That number is a lot higher. So right now, the unemployment number is 4.9%. That was for February. The other unemployment number that the Bureau of Labor Statistics calculates is much closer to 10%, which is that's where the regular unemployment number was at the height of the Great Recession. So if you're looking at this other number, that tells a little bit different story. We still seem to have growth with GDP numbers going up, but nobody's really satisfied with where that number is. It's lower than we would like it to be. The number that kind of gets lost in the wash, the one that scares a lot of policymakers, especially at the Fed, is the inflation number. So last month, inflation was actually negative, which means that prices as a whole are going down. For consumers, that's great news. For businesses, that's terrible news, because if prices are going down, they've already incurred the cost to produce things, and now they're not getting as much back in return, and so it's harder for them to cover costs, and that can certainly be a problem.
The other thing, too, is you said that wages are up slightly, but wages, we have seen just stagnation when it comes to wages, and isn't that the real problem here? Isn't that what the people that are deciding that they're liking what they hear from Bernie Sanders are feeling must be addressed? Income disparity? Isn't that at the core of our economic problems in this country?
Well, yeah, I probably talked about that particular number as being a little bit more rosy than it is. It's really close to flat. You're right about that. I mean, it's up, but, 1 cent is up, and, that's not really what anybody wants to see.
But it's a problem, right? It continues to not be addressed?
If wages are stagnant and prices change, if there is inflation, then it becomes a huge problem. As far as income disparity, as far as differences in income between the upper levels, the upper segments of society and the lower segments of society, that's a question that economists have been wrestling with a lot. We have to be really careful about trying to bring people too close together, because we can have an economy where everybody's incredibly poor, but we have no income disparity. And we don't want that. What we'd like to have is have that lower level come up closer to the upper level. We don't want necessarily to bring the upper level down, because again, we could have a very, very, very poor economy, but no income disparity, which would satisfy some, but would also make our lives relatively miserable. So what we would like to do somehow, and I wish I had an answer for how to do this, but we'd like to get the folks at the lower end of the wage spectrum to get closer to the upper end of the wage spectrum without distorting the economy. And that's really the key. Can you keep growth going? Can you continue to bring unemployment down and bring those wages closer together? And you're right. Those are the folks who hear Bernie Sanders talk, and he's saying, hey, we can bring everybody closer together. Bernie Sanders' economic plan seeks to accomplish that more than anything else by just really ratcheting taxes up. Unfortunately, what I've seen of his plan is ratchets taxes up on everybody. So it's a tough thing to kind of swallow if you're not making very much and someone's selling you on a plan that's going to raise your taxes.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our guest is Brian O'Rourke, who is a Robert Morris University professor of economics. And Brian, I would ask you, how has the economy done since the recession?
I think you can clearly say that it's done a lot better. The economy has definitely improved. I mean, the point, at sort of the lowest point of the Great Recession was really bad and really scary. I mean, it doesn't come anywhere close to the Great Depression, fortunately. But there was certainly a fear that was generated on the part of people. And for a lot of folks, that fear hasn't gone away. Even though the numbers are looking better, they still know people who are out of work or who are not in the same kinds of jobs or not making the same amount of money as they were before. And so you certainly see that in the election cycle these days. You see folks, what is really curious to me is the disparity between the candidates. You have Bernie Sanders on one end, you have a Ted Cruz or somebody on the other end, and then you have this sort of crossover, this almost conjunction of interest between folks on the Bernie Sanders side and folks on the Donald Trump side, especially when it comes to issues like trade. They're like kindred spirits on the trade front. And you're thinking, my goodness, how could people who are so vastly different in their ideologies be so connected on this one particular economic issue? It's a bizarre kind of thing.
Have trade agreements like NAFTA and, for that matter, the Trans-Pacific, which have been mentioned a lot during the debates, are they hurting the economy?
The easy answer to that is no. Trade agreements always help macro economies, and that's where the distinction needs to be made. So for a country as a whole, a free trade agreement is a good thing. You're going to get a lot. You're going to get more winners than losers. The problem is it will hurt certain segments of the economy. And those people who are harmed by the trade agreements tend to be the loudest. Those are the people who have a vested interest, a very, very specific vested interest in the outcomes of these kind of trade agreements. So folks in Michigan, for example, who voted for Bernie Sanders and who voted for Donald Trump, hear these anti-trade platforms in those candidates' positions, and they say, hey, you know what? They're talking to me because our jobs have moved elsewhere. And it's not a coincidence that those jobs have moved elsewhere after these trade agreements have been signed. So it's certainly painful for certain parts of the economy. As for the economy as a whole, if we start to put trade barriers up against other countries, we run the risk of walking into Walmart and instead of finding a t-shirt for $10, that t-shirt's now $15 or $20. And that means everything starts to get more expensive for the rest of the population. So it's an issue of macro versus micro. At the macro level, trade agreements are great, but people don't live at the macro level, they live at the micro level, and they are certainly can be hurt by those trade agreements.
By no means are we asking you to endorse a candidate, but based on what you've seen, which candidates seem to have sound economic policies?
Okay, we're talking about politicians here, so I think it's safe to say that none of them have sound economic policies at this point. I mean, at least on the campaign trail, they're all saying stuff that if any of their policies would go into effect, at least what they say on the stump, the deficits would double or triple. It would be just mass chaos.
Even Donald Trump?
Oh, yeah, because Trump's just, he'd end up, I think, if he goes with what he's saying there, I think he ends up putting up these crazy trade barriers and then everything gets really a lot more expensive for us. We saw this during the Great Depression, where trade barriers get put in place, and the reaction is that other countries put trade barriers against our products. We entered into trade wars, and nobody wins with a trade war. So Trump's positions, if he would actually put out something that could be read and studied a little bit more, I'd be really interested in seeing it. Overall, of the candidates that are out there, and you know, analysis of these trade policies are all over the map. It's really easy, I should say, to find someone who agrees with Hillary Clinton's plan, who agrees with Donald Trump's plan, who agrees with Ted Cruz's plan, and they'll just crush everybody else. I think of the candidates that are out there, the one who has the one plan that has seems to have the most realistic approach is actually Kasich's, but his chances of winning are actually pretty much nothing. Bernie Sanders,
he wouldn't say that, but
oh no, Kasich would never say that.
But others are.
But I mean, if you just look at the electoral math, then he can't win. But he's got the experience of running a state, so he's got a little bit better idea as to how things need to work. I think he's a more practical candidate. Hillary's plan has a lot of positive things in it. I think she has at least has some experience running, at least experience at the federal government level, and has kind of an idea of what's going on. But as far as tax plans are concerned, Hillary promises a lot by taxing the rich, and there's just not enough rich people. And they don't, I mean, rich people make a lot of money, but they don't make enough money to cover all of the promises and the goodies that are being offered by the candidates. Of course, Bernie Sanders says, we're just going to tax everybody. And again, there's not enough money to be taxed away to pay for all the things that Sanders wants. Cruz's plan is, I think, the most interesting, at least in a vacuum, where he wants to levy a flat tax so everybody pays the same tax rate. The rich would still pay more because they make more. And, you know, the idea of a flat tax has been floating around for a long time.
That's an idea that's really championed by conservative politicians.
Right, right. And the idea is sort of if we don't overtax people, if we don't have a progressive tax rate, it encourages folks to go out and work harder and work more because they get to keep more of their money. Just from a, you know, a curiosity perspective, I think that would be one I would love to see put in place. Unfortunately, the numbers that I've seen are that the revenue that would be generated from that percentage that he's suggesting just would not cover expenses and would blow the deficit up quite a bit, which that's not supposed to be what Cruz is advocating, but it seems like that's how the numbers work out.
Brian O'Rourke is a economics professor at Robert Morris University and joins us from time to time to talk about the economy. Thank you so much for stopping by to be with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
More Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA.